Mini seminar, the role of a minister. We have discussed ordination, what is a minister, and now, what is a practitioner? What is a practitioner? It's a very good statement, isn't it? What is a practitioner? Well, a practitioner is one who practices. Okay, now you got it. We're all set, aren't we? A practitioner is one who practices. Now, a practitioner in the art of the University of Healing and the Church of God Unlimited and in our work here is one who puts causes in motion for what? For who?
For himself.
For himself. Isn't that interesting? A practitioner puts causes in motion for himself. Now, why? Don't answer. I got to talk a little bit here. Why does a practitioner put causes in motion for himself or herself? A practitioner puts causes in motion for themselves because they are the only ones that are existing. If you call and say, I would like a healing, and they would say, okay, I would like to be whole and perfect. Okay, I'd like to tell you what my problem is. No. But I got cancer. Oh, shut up. I don't want to hear it. You tell me that, and then I have to practice on getting that out of my consciousness and seeing you whole and perfect. Now, do you want me to see you whole and perfect, or do you want me to see you with cancer? I mean, if cancer is what you want, I mean, bless your heart. I think you need another psychiatrist more than you need a practitioner here. But, okay, if healing is what you want, then you call the practitioner. And the practitioner says, what would you like? Harmony in my home, peace on earth, abundance, wholeness in my body. See, those are the things you want. Those are the things you want. So you tell the practitioner, I would like wholeness in my body. And so the practitioner says, just a minute. And the practitioner goes, click, 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 wholeness in the body, wholeness in the body. Okay, here we go. Now, wholeness in the body. I see your body whole and perfect right now. And do you know why I see your body whole and perfect right now? Do you know why I, the practitioner, see your body whole? The practitioner won't say this to you, but this is what they're doing. Do you know why I see you whole and perfect? Because first, I see me whole and perfect. And as a practitioner, if I see myself whole and perfect, then you are a reflection of what I see. And I give you that reflection as being whole and perfect, and you are whole and perfect right now. See, a practitioner does not make a change of anything. A practitioner only sees you whole and perfect. Okay, now, inside of each one of us is sickness and health, wealth, poverty, all that stuff. Not the opposites, but the allness. Get that point. It's the allness, not that one is good and one's bad. Okay, so, now, you got the allness. What aspects of the allness do you want to experience in your life? What aspects of the allness are important for you? What aspects of the allness are what you really want to know in your world and in your experience? Well, I want to know wholeness. I want to know that my body is whole and perfect. I mean, it is, of course, but I mean, I want to know that. Now, how do I reaffirm that? How do I reassess that? How do I re-understand that in my thinking when I have let illusions tell me things that, you know, appear to be so? It looks like it's going to rain. You keep it up and it will, if that's what you want. It looks like it's going to snow. You keep it up and it will. It looks like the sun's going to shine. You keep it up and it will. It's so hot you can fry eggs on the sidewalk. You keep it up and it will. You know? Whatever attitude you want, you keep it up and it will. And it does. You know? It's your choice. So now, what are you going to do about the world in which you live? What are you going to do about the world in which you live? Now, I'm going to say that a few times. What are you going to do about the world in which you live? What are you going to do about the world in which you live? What are you going to do about the world in which you live? The practitioner does this in the world in which the practitioner lives. The practitioner says, healing. Ah, yes. Wholeness, purity, goodness, happiness, a body that is vital and dynamic. The practitioner builds an ambience They build a feeling in the atmosphere. They build a feeling in the world in which they're thinking about this person. So now, let's just say that it's Ingeborg I'm thinking about. So I'm thinking about Ingeborg. She called and asked for wholeness. And so now I'm thinking about, I don't know Ingeborg, but I'm creating her as a very wonderful lady, the very super lady, intelligent and dynamic, surrounded by friends, surrounded by people who are just as beautiful as she is. I see her surrounded by a body that, my God, the gods would love to have, you know? But you got it, because you're God. So, yeah, see, you're surrounded by this absolutely fabulous body, whole and perfect. You want me to keep going? You do? Okay. She wants me to keep going, but she doesn't say yes. She just says, Okay, now, and I see you living in an environment where everyone looks at you and says, wow, she is such a gorgeous lady. I feel so good in her presence. She just smells like healing. She smells like purity. She smells, what does it smell like? Who knows? But she smells like that. She smells like everything beautiful and good. No perfume has ever been invented to smell like wholeness as Ingeborg smells, you know? That's kind of nice, isn't it? Okay. Now, I'm the practitioner, and this is what I've done for her. But I first did it for myself. I first did it for myself, because I could not see her that way if I did not see myself that way. A practitioner's duty is first to themselves. We spoke about that the other day about on the airplane. On the airplane, there is a statement by the airlines, and it says, should cabin pressure drop, an oxygen mask will drop in front of your head from overhead. Take the oxygen mask and put it on yourself first, and then help someone else who cannot do it. Your child, your grandma, you know, some person who feels that they are not quite as good as you are. So put the oxygen mask on first. Now that's an indication of a practitioner. The practitioner first has to put the oxygen mask on themselves. When the practitioner has that oxygen mask on, oh, they're breathing so good. They feel so fantastic. Their lungs are filled with pure oxygen and air. They feel just wonderful. And they say, can I help you? And the person looks at them, what are you on? I'm on good fresh air. May I help you? Yes, please do. And on both sides. And they say, what tank are you taking it from? And they're taking it from the tank of goodness. But you see, this is what a practitioner does. A practitioner first breathes that beautiful, fresh oxygen themselves. You might be dying out there. Hurry up, practitioner, speak your word for me. I want you to hurry up. But the practitioner doesn't hurry. The practitioner takes the second that it takes to recognize their own perfection. You understand? Then the practitioner says, all righty, I'm tanked up. Now, I see you tanked up. I see you whole. Oh, thank you, thank you. I see you perfect. I see every organ, action, function of your body perfect. I see you with life and vigor and vim. I see your, and if it's a girl, I see your husband thinking you're the most superwoman in the world, you know, because you're just filled with energy. And if it's a man, I see your wife thinking that, man, if every, you know, wow, you know, what can you say? And so, you see, you have to get yourself generated. You have to, as a practitioner, be alive. Now, people call up here for healing treatment, and they get the office number, because that's our business number. And it's the 800 number, and they call and ask for treatment. And so when they call and ask for treatment, we say, God Unlimited, University of Healing, may we help you? I'd like to speak to a practitioner. I'm calling about healing. Oh, wonderful. I'm a practitioner. What can I do to help you? Well, and then they go on. And we keep them on track, making sure that they only say the generic aspect, not the specifics. Not the specifics of what it is. Just the statement that they would be whole and perfect. They would be rich, independently wealthy. You know, practitioner always enjoys that one too, you know. And the statement is they have many friends. They're surrounded by a harmonious universe. And they're in the middle of a war-torn country. And they say, I'm in the middle of this war-torn country, and I would see there's peace. And so the practitioner doesn't waste any time. The practitioner instantly says, hey, there now is peace on earth, and right where you stand, there's peace. Look around you. You will see that there are no guns going off. There are no tanks. There are no weapons of war. There are no indication, no men in uniform. There is only peace. There is only peace. There is only peace. There is only peace. Now look around. What are the women doing? The women are having coffee together, talking about the children, or talking about whatever women feel to talk about at a given time. But not war. And you look out in the yard, and the men who had been at war an instant before are now tilling the garden, are now preparing their cars to go off to their business. Right in the middle of the war-torn country, in the war-torn air, peace instantaneously. Now you say, God, Herb, you should really get on the Peace Corps with this sort of thing. No. It works with each individual practitioner. But it is not your privilege to go in and change the world. If people want war, that's their privilege, but not where you're concerned. If people want illness, that's their privilege, but it's not where you're concerned. Wherever you are invited by your own actions or by others who invite you there to speak for peace or to speak for wholeness or to speak for goodness for them, that's good. But wherever you are not invited, you don't look at the television and look for wars. You don't look for murderers. You don't look for illegal activities. You don't look for that. For if you surely look for it, you will surely find it, surely as your day you're born. That's the way it is. But if you look for peace, wherever you go, you will have peace brought to your attention. If you look for abundance, you will have abundance brought to your attention. At the monastery recently, we've been talking a lot about Billy Gates, you know, and his friends. And as we've been talking about them, no jealousy. We don't want their money. There is more money in the universe than they have. We don't want them. We want their consciousness. Their consciousness of abundance. Their consciousness of independent wealth. And the way you get that consciousness is by your thinking, by your attitude of mind, by the way in which you conduct your thought process. Now, did you visualize Ingeborg as femme fatale, as a woman of the world, of a woman who could accomplish anything she chose because she has a perfect body, a perfect mind, and she's 3,000 years old, and she looks like she's 25? You know? I'm not kidding you. There are things none of you know about Ingeborg. And it's none of your business. But if you knew it, you would be amazed at what she is able to do with all of the things that she has done. Now, she doesn't know either, because she's only living in the now. She's not living in the past, nor are any of the rest of us. We're living in the now. And I could say about each one of you what I could say about Ingeborg, but you wouldn't believe me. You're like the little boy who says, Mama, I know you're putting me on, but go ahead and do it. Go ahead and do it. That's just fine. And the little boy who says, Mama, I know you're just trying to get me to take care of my room and to appreciate what life is all about here, but that's okay. You go ahead and do it. I like that. You care about me. That's a nice kind of caring. I will build beautiful habits right this minute, which will help me all of my life to be a beneficial person to myself and everyone in my world. Thanks, Mama. Thanks for caring. Now, little boys don't say those things quite so loquaciously, but they do say them. They say them with what? Anyone can tell me? It's just one word they say it with. What do they say it with?
Smile.
With a big smile. With a big smile. Thank you, Bobby. You know, and cheek to cheek, the eye to eye, the smile is across their face, total. Now, do you have a smile across your face when I tell you good things? And do I tell you good things all the time? Yeah, come on, yeah. I see it. See, they're going like this here. Yeah. That's okay. But live that way, because you are the fabulous practitioner. You are the practitioner that is putting causes in motion for yourself first, and then for whoever called. Now, just think about this. Here you are in the airplane, and it's losing oxygen for whatever reason. No, nothing terrible. And the cabin pressure is down. So you breathe in this oxygen mask. And so then you look around, and here you have 10 little kids right around you. And you got the mask hanging there, you know, from the ceiling, and you're going to each little child. And you're saying, all right now, breathe deep. There you go. Oh, this is so nice. Thank you. You go to the next one. Oh, that's so nice. Thank you. And on to all 10 of them. And you get the joy of each one sharing with you that you have been a practitioner in a very real way for them. You see? Now, did you get 11 times the joy, starting with yourself? 11 times the joy. So you, as a practitioner, speaking your word of purity and goodness and right action and peace for the next person, is getting, you know, the same amount, if not a great deal more, because you know the principle. We have Quiet Healing Zone, which is the practitioner's manual now, and we also have the practitioner's manual. And the practitioner's manual tells many stories about our practitioners who have done things, but I told them they're not bold enough. They told beautiful things, but they didn't tell it in the boldness that they should. That they spoke their word and wow, whammy, you know. But they didn't say that because they wanted to be modest. You know, they wanted to be humble. And I said, that's not the place to be humble. Let go. But what they said was really great. Everyone who's read the book says, wow, those are beautiful illustrations. But that's only half of it. The real illustration, the real power, they were too humble to put in there. Well, in Quiet Healing Zone, the author was not quite so humble. And that was me. I put in there illustrations of greatness and beautiful quality of working with people. Working with people in prisons. I had thousands of men that I've worked with in the prison over a 10-year period. And it was amazing to see how many of them would want to have the treatment, would want to have the help, would come and ask for guidance and come and ask for it. And they got it. But you see, in working in that way, you're under a very unusual situation. Because first, you have to like yourself before you think you can be working with somebody else. First, you have to believe in yourself before you can help anyone else. And you see, in a prison situation, that's a difficult thing, because they keep reminding you that that's not so. Now, in a practitioner situation from the university here, that's different. They come thinking that you're a practitioner and that you are so magnificent, you're so fantastic, you're so glorious. You don't have to prove to them that, you know, you can do the work. You just do it. Along with your title, along with your relationship and the association of our telephone number, comes all that power. But think about it. Here you are in an auto accident, and everybody is squashed up so-and-so, and you're right in the middle. And they say, oh, and you say, I'm whole and perfect. Every organ, action, function of my body is whole and perfect. To yourself. I'm whole and perfect. Every organ, action, function of my body is whole and perfect. You get your mental attitude in order. And then you start looking around you at your people with you, whoever they may be, and you say to them in your own consciousness, you're whole and perfect. I surround you with my pure white light of love. I see every organ, action, and function of your body in divine order right now. You go over each one, aloud or quietly. Quietly is even better. And when you do that, They are in your world. They are in your life. They are commanded right upon your being. And then you speak your word, and miracles happen to them, and they don't know why or how. You didn't do the miracle. You merely called forth the wholeness that was within yourself and in them as a practitioner. You created yourself in an aura of wholeness and perfection. Well, why did you have the accident in the first place? That's not the point. It's true. You should have surrounded yourself and the car with your pure white light of love before you drove one inch. But we do silly things sometimes. We don't do that. I teach you, before you get in your car, I surround you with my pure white light of love. All is in divine order right now. All my ways are peace. All my paths are pleasant. I say, do this, do this, do this. And you don't. And then you have accidents. And it's silly. It's unnecessary. Totally unnecessary. Now, when you get into your airplane, both Ellen and I fly airplanes. When you get into an airplane, what's the first thing you do before you take that airplane off? You walk around it. You walk around that airplane and you make sure that the propeller is there. You make sure that everything is in good condition, that everything is not damaged by the wind or something else that might have come along and caused it to be not operative. And then you get in the airplane and you check each thing out. And even though the gas truck was just there and filled the tank with gas, you don't believe that. You take a stick that you have and you stick it in there and you say, yes, I have a tank full of gas. When you take off in an airplane, doing it as you are taught to do it and as you're supposed to do it, you know that airplane is in good condition. Now, they don't teach you to surround your plane with the pure white light of love and know that all its ways are peace and all its paths are pleasantness, but we do that. So, if you did that, you wouldn't have to have any accidents. You wouldn't have to have any problems. You wouldn't have to have any circumstances that are out of line for you. But you see, a practitioner doesn't forget those things. And a practitioner doesn't make a big fuss out of them. Jeff, our stockbroker, took us out in an airplane the other day and flew us around because he just got his upgrade on his license for a higher grade plane. And so the gas truck was there and filled the tank with gas. And Jeff comes along and he climbs up there, all this bother. Takes a stick and sticks it in there, even though he's got a gas gauge inside the airplane, and checks out the gas. Yep, full. And he checks out everything. He checked out the ailerons. He checked out the rudder. He checked out everything about it, the prop. And then he got in the plane. And there was not a soul within 200 feet. But he sang out, contact, clear. Because he wanted to make sure that everyone heard that he's going to start his engine now and that old propeller was going to go flipping around and he didn't want anyone to be in the way. So he shouted clear, like a golfer shouts four when he shoots. Okay? Now, why did he do this? Because in his mind, he wanted to have everything clear. In his mind, he wanted to have that airplane in perfect condition. In his mind, he wanted everything he did to be in harmony with the rules and the regulations of safe flying, and rather than saying safe flying, of happy flying, you know, because there's nothing to be safe from. So, can we do that with our cars? Wouldn't it be nice? Wouldn't it be nice to check the air pressure in our tires occasionally? Wouldn't it be nice to check the oil in our the oil in our tank and the gas and stuff like that? Wouldn't it be nice to see what we're doing? Wouldn't it be nice to see if the steering wheel works properly and the brakes work properly? Wouldn't it be nice to make sure the hood is closed tight on the front of the car? Wouldn't it be nice to make sure that everybody in the car has their seatbelt safely, happily ensconced about them? You follow me? Okay. It's the rules. It's the rules. And we don't say that the rules are crazy, the rules are wrong, but it's the rules. And they say, keep your seatbelt on until you reach your driveway and turn off your engine. In the airplane, they say, do not get out of your seat until the airplane has come to a full stop in front of the terminal and the captain has said, seat belts are released. Now, why? That's just the rule. And I'm sure there's all sorts of reasons, and we don't care about the reason. We follow the rules. The rule says that. Now, do we keep our seatbelt on until we turn off the engine at our location, at our home, and then get out of the car? They say more accidents are caused within 2 miles of the home than anything else of drivers. Interesting, isn't it? So that's important to us, but a practitioner follows the rules. And the rule is, as a man thinketh in his heart, so is he. If we think in our heart we have cancer, have it. If you think in your heart you have a problem, have it. If you think in your heart you're whole and perfect, have it. One of my people that I had loved very dearly, I told you about her, that's Irene, remember? And Irene was dying of cancer, and we worked with her, and she was healed entirely, entirely. And so I was at dinner at their home, and Irene said, Herb, I want to show you something. And so she called out her schnauzer and said, Herb, look at that dog. I said, yeah, it's a nice little dog. It looks just like you. She said, you should have a schnauzer like that. I said, oh, I was thinking of getting a dog, but I hadn't figured out what kind I was going to get. You should have a schnauzer. So I found a schnauzer and bought him. And then I told her about the schnauzer, and she says, let's see it. And so she met Gus, and she says, what a lovely dog. No, I'm sorry. I'm sorry, Rex. We didn't mean to. You're good, too. And so she met Gus, and then in the mail, 2 days later, came a check for whatever it cost me to purchase Gus. I think it's $700, you know, as a pedigreed schnauzer, and for its medical checkup and all that sort of good stuff, and its pedigree check, you know, and it was quite a bit of money she sent, and for food. But you see, when you follow the rules, the doors are just open for you for all sorts of wonderful things. And she wanted me to have the schnauzer because it looked like me. And every time she looked at her schnauzer, she said, I'm whole and perfect, and it reminded her of me. And that was lovely. So, I mean, I wasn't about to argue with her. And that is beautiful. And the story of Irene is quite an amazing story, which I'll tell you one of these days, too. I've already told it to the group several times. So, but it's fantastic when you put the practitioner, I'll tell you right now. Irene was dying of cancer, and she was all shriveled up like a nothing, like a prune, you know. And she was all in her bed in El Central, California, down here, and she was very wealthy. Her family owned thousands of acres in five crops a season, you know, and that's good stuff, you know. And so her daughter, I didn't know Irene, her daughter was a member of our church down there, the Religious Science Church, and she said, Dr. Barley, will you go and see my mom? She's dying of cancer. Sure. So I went in the hospital and I saw her, and I said, hi, Irene, I hear you're dying of cancer. Oh, what a way to talk to a person, that's terrible. Who are you? And I said, well, I'm your daughter's minister. She says, oh, I heard about you. You know? And so we had a talk. And I said, I hear you're dying of cancer. Is that what you want to do? What do you mean, is that what I want to do? I have no choice. The doctor says I'm dying, so I'm dying, you know. And I said, well, you do have a choice. The doctor said, if what you're doing, you keep on doing, you'll die. But he didn't tell you, perhaps, that if you change your attitude and change your way of thinking, you'd live. Well, look, I'm nothing now, you know. I said, that has nothing to do with it. You're still living. And I said, would you like to live or you want to die? She said, well, I want to live. I said, okay, how strong are you? Well, you can see, I don't mean that. In your mind, in your heart, how strong are you? She said, like an ox. I said, okay, do you have the courage to ask the doctor to come in here and tell the doctor you'd like him to tell your family that your cancer was a misdiagnosis and that you had something else and now it's healing perfectly, and you'll be okay in no time. Well, what if it doesn't work? They'll think I'm silly. I said, what difference does it make? If you're dead and it didn't work, it makes no difference. You're still dead. And if you're alive, it makes no difference either. So why don't you just call the doctor and tell him? That's just dumb, but okay. So she called the doctor. And the doctor says, cuckoo. You know, her last, the last request of a dying person, whatever it may be, you know. So, okay. They call the family, and the family says, oh, Grandma, how wonderful, Mom, how wonderful, you're going to live, oh, whoa. And everybody gave her that enthusiasm, that joy, and she had a new lust for living and a new direction, and she released the hold that she was having on that cancer, saying, you know, this is your playground, just have fun. And she said, out, out. And within a couple of weeks, she was putting on weight. Within a couple of months, she was out of the hospital. Within a half a year, she was back on the tennis court. Can you imagine that? And she was in her late 70s. Amazing lady. Amazing lady. Now, what happened? I, as a practitioner, went in there, and I said, hey, you're home perfect. You're home perfect. I acted a little bit of a minister in there, too. But I said, you're home perfect. You're home perfect. And she says, oh, do I have a choice? And I said, you certainly do, you know. It's your body. You can take a knife and go, boop, and you're dead right now. Or you cannot take a knife, and then you're not, boop, right dead right now. You know, just like that. It's your choice. Now, what do you want to do? And she wanted to live. And I said, you're whole and perfect. You see, we don't tell people to do something they don't want to do. If she wanted to die, I would have told her. I said, if you want to die, stop spending all this money on the hospital bills here. Conk out, you know. Let go. I have said this to different people who wanted to do that because that's their privilege. We don't force people to live as practitioners. We don't force people to get well as practitioners. We don't force people to have happy relationships and to have abundance and all this other good stuff. We speak our word for their choice, for whatever their choice is. And then it is done. A practitioner is not God for somebody else. A practitioner is God for themselves, it's true. And everyone is God for themselves. And we merely work with the God presence in anyone else, seeing them how they want to see themselves. And in a lot of divorce cases, I work with people and I say, hey, you've done such a lot of work with him or her up to this point. You know, you built up this relationship. Why blow it? Why not just say, we have a perfect marriage. We have a perfect relationship. We are living harmoniously together. We love each other. We care about each other. That's why we got married in the first place. We care about each other. And those who really wanted to do that, who really were, you know, saw a little bit of light there, spoke their word, and their marriages were whole and perfect in no time, by their choice. We can sometimes get so emotionally out of line on these things that we forget and we don't pay attention. But as soon as we make a decision, and with the help of a practitioner, that's a very wonderful thing too. As soon as we make a decision, perfect right action can take place in our life according to our choice. Perfect right action can be death. It can be tires of death. My brother, he is 83, and he says, I'm enjoying life. He says, but it'd be interesting to die. He says, I have no feelings about it. It'd be kind of interesting to see what's going on that next experience that I'm going to have. And he said, and you better watch out, because I'm going to be watching what you're doing here, too. You know, he feels that he'd be able to do that. And so, good for him. But he's not really interested in dying, because he's acting alive. He's acting whole. He's acting fun. He's acting as though the joy of life is just bubbling over in him. And that it is. Now, what are you doing? What sort of a life are you going through? What sort of an attitude are you going through? That's a decision that you have to make for yourself. You have to decide for yourself what sort of an attitude you want to know. You see, Ellen, I can look at this thing here, and I know exactly when I have 35 minutes on it. And I have 34 minutes and 53 seconds right now. So, that concludes What is a practitioner? And for more of this wonderful information, call us at God Unlimited University of Healing, and we will bubble over for you whatever your request may be. I love you. I love you. I love you. You're fantastic.
Thank you. I love you.